What is up, Level Up Nation, and welcome to episode 131 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again by the king of the courtside, Joey. What's poppin', J-Mac-D? What up?
John, I don't know about you, but I am really enjoying this three-day weekend here on day two, and we still have one day to go. It does feel weird recording Level Up on a Sunday night, though.
It does, especially when I'm leaving for Atlanta tomorrow morning. It's not esports related. I'm just taking a vacation away from Joey.
Hey, but we might be going back to Atlanta for something esports related here in a couple weeks.
This is true. That is over a weekend, correct? Or is it?
I believe so. I think it's July 4th weekend, whatever that weekend closest.
Ooh, July 4th in Washington, D.C. We're going to have to try to travel during that? That's a nightmare.
I'm trying to see. Okay, wait a minute. Let's pull it up right now. I want to say it is July, I think it's July 6th, that Saturday.
And that's for when the Washington Justice play the home match, if you will, against the Atlanta Reign.
The home stand in Atlanta.
Yes. Well, it's going to be an invasion of justice down in Atlanta. Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, make sure to give Joey and myself a follow. Follow Joey at Courtside King and myself at Fiasco. If you are watching here live on Twitch, those handles are beautifully displayed right below our mugshots. And if you're listening on the podcast later on down the road, they will be in the show notes for you below. Nation, aside from the drama llama known as Tfue vs. FaZe Clan, Riot has stolen the spotlight this week. Hope you like League of Legends, because it's coming in hot and heavy. Joey, aside from the 100 Riot game topics this week, what else are we talking about on episode 131?
John, nothing else.
That's what it feels like.
I mean, for the most part, this is very Riot heavy. It's going to be a huge Riot Games episode. They really started a riot here in the esports industry this past week. Tons of stuff coming out, from revenue sharing to player acquisitions and moves, all the way up until some interesting stuff they have going on in the realm of partnerships as well. So we are really hitting League of Legends very hard this week.
All right. So it's going to be a lot of Riot, little bit of drama, probably a lot. I mean, it feels like every time we talk about Riot there has to be drama. I don't think there's a lot of drama in regards to Riot this go around. But some really, really cool announcements. So, Joey, we have our topics. There may be a little drama towards the end of the show, so I feel like I need some aid. I need some aid of a beverage, a drink of choice, maybe. So, Joey, for the 131st time, and I think for the first time ever on a Sunday, I need your beverage of choice, please.
Ooh, I don't think this is our first time ever, actually. I think we've done it once or twice before, but...
I can't remember.
I'm going with a Montepulciano di Abruzzo. I have no idea how to pronounce that in Italian. I'm just taking a wild guess on that one.
Did you say something about my mom? Like, I don't even know what you said.
We need Daniel Tilson to really confirm that Italian there.
Absolutely.
But overall, great wine, John. I don't know if you've ever had it. It's a red wine from Trader Joe's, straight out of Italy as well. Very, very good, and it's a cheaper wine as well. It's one of the few cheap wines I actually like.
So it's a wine from Italy at Trader Joe's.
Correct.
Italy exports wine to Trader Joe's.
Who wouldn't?
You know, I spent yesterday at a winery, and I feel slightly offended that you're bringing Trader Joe wine onto the show here. Joey, I don't have wine because it's a Sunday fun day. I'm going again with the fun hard liquor, the Jack Daniel's Tennessee honey. I almost said American honey because, like, that's totally not what it's called. So, Joey,
feels American on Memorial Day weekend, though, no?
Oh, pretty much. I have my Tennessee honey. You have your something in Italian wine. We have our topics. Let's get right into gaming and esports news.
Let's kick it right off with those Riot Games moves. League of Legends Snake Esports was recently bought by sporting brand Li Ning, and they are now deciding to rename themselves LNG Esports. And this is going to be a move they're making for the summer split. John, overall, I'm kind of indifferent on this move overall. If someone wants to pay a lot of money to buy you out, they have the ability to change your name as well. I think that's just what we're seeing here.
And if I may, taking a look at the two logos and the team colors, I feel like it's an upgrade here. Snake Esports, their logo, your stereotypical golden black logo, looks like something out of the 90s. If you're a 90s kid and you remember watching on Nickelodeon the show Guts, that's kind of what their old logo reminds me of for some reason. I don't know why, but it has that Guts vibe to it. But their new logo for LNG is a dragon that is blue and pink, and I absolutely love it. I love the rebrand. I think it looks absolutely fantastic. I'm a huge fan already just by the logo.
Wow, that was easy to win you over on that one.
Yeah, I'm fairly easy to win over.
I mean, it does look pretty good overall, and I think the big thing here is just the fact if someone buys you out, you're going to change your name if they want you to change your name, and I think that's really what we're seeing here. I'm guessing that stands for Leading Gaming Esports, which is interesting to see gaming and esports back-to-back like that. When you make it a G, it doesn't look too funky. So overall, congrats to Snake Esports. Hopefully this new funding that they're bringing in from the Pro Athletic Wear company is able to fund that team a bit because they could use some help in the standings as well. SK Gaming has promoted Sakura to the main team, sending Whirlib down to SK Prime. This is a new up-and-coming top laner. SK Prime looked very good in EU Masters. The top laner in particular, Sakura, had a really good experience there. He's really an up-and-coming top lane player. Now they're going to give him the opportunity to play for the main team come Summer Split. We don't know if he'll be there the whole split, but he's at least going to kick it off there. In addition, we're seeing Whirlib, who's been around for so long. He's been on Giants as a starter multiple times. He was on Fnatic as a sub. He played really well over in EU Masters previously as well. Now he's getting bumped down to the Academy team, but it was something he accepted as well. He was open to this move. I think one of the big reasons, John, he realized his mechanics are going downhill a bit. They're not at the level they were at his peak. At the same point, he also brings a ton of veteran experience to the team, and that SK Prime squad is so talented as an Academy squad, he'll be able to bring a lot of that experience and help them continue to grow.
And also give him a chance to kind of redefine his mechanics too, realizing that, you know, his mechanics and his play levels kind of sliding a little bit. It'll give him a chance to kind of reset also, put himself among some younger players that need that veteran leadership that he can bring, but also he may be able to learn a lot of stuff mechanically from the younger players as well and possibly bring that into his game too. So I think it's a beneficial move for all parties involved.
Right, and don't get me wrong, he played very well. He was probably one of the better players on SK in the spring split, but I think looking future-wise with this league now being franchised over in the LEC, SK wants to find ways for them to bring these younger players, these young talents, up a little sooner and help them progress, and I think giving Sakurai the ability to do that right at the beginning of the summer split, see how he plays on the main stage, is a good move by SK overall. Rogue is doing the same thing, and in top lane as well. They're promoting Finn over from the Ultra Liga to their LEC squad as their starting top laner. I believe they're also moving Larson into the mid lane because he has now graduated college as well. So this is going to be a much younger Rogue squad, a Rogue squad that looked terrible in the spring split. We're not going to hold anything back on them. They did not look clean at all. I think bringing in two young players, two very strong talents, Finn has really proved himself in top lane at a younger level. Larson is one of the top three up-and-coming mid laners in Europe. I really think bringing this youth talent, it's going to be a little rocky at the start, but mechanically they're going to be much better. Anything else on those League of Legends moves, John?
Nope, it's about time Rogue did something.
And with that, we're going to take a quick dive away from League of Legends and hit Overwatch for a bit, because we have a huge announcement for Overwatch League, and that is the fact that Commissioner Nate Nancer is leaving Activision Blizzard. He's taking up a new job at Epic Games as their esports lead. In the meantime, Pete, I believe it's pronounced Velastelica, taking over as the Overwatch League's interim commissioner. The big thing here, John, I think is going to be Nate Nancer. He brings a ton of experience working with the Overwatch League for a year and a half now, as well as all these, I feel like it was almost a year of development for that league, at least publicly known, for them building up that league. And I think with Nate bringing in all of that experience he gained with Blizzard in the Overwatch League, he'll be able to help Epic finally right their esports ship, because they're throwing tons and tons of money at it, but orgs are not happy, players are not super happy with it. between last-minute changes, between orgs not being recognized like they are in other esports, and now with Epic also acquiring Rocket League, which could use... its esports league is doing well, but their seasonal format could definitely use an update, in my opinion. I think bringing Nate over is going to help with a lot of that, and we could see Epic Games really start to become a contender in esports.
Yeah, I feel like that this is a bigger move for Rocket League, trying to pull that scene together and solidify what's going on with their season. I really don't see Fortnite being affected at all. Like I almost don't think Epic really cares that much, because again, the way they've handled it, granted they've completely mismanaged it and they didn't really have anyone there with that experience, so maybe I could be wrong here, but I feel like bringing Nate in is going to mean more for Rocket League than Fortnite. Fortnite is their cash cow, but that's all it is. It is a cash cow. It's got a massive, massive player base still. But the esports scene is still just an absolute dumpster fire. They may have a successful tournament here or there, but that also comes with major changes to the game meta and the equipment that they have in the game, the way the game is played, 24 hours before a multi-million dollar tournament kicks off, which really irritates a lot of the pros out there. There's just so much wrong with the Fortnite esports scene. I really don't see this move by Epic bringing in Nate. Again, huge loss for Overwatch, I feel. But I feel like this is going to be more beneficial to Rocket League than anything to do with Fortnite. I think Fortnite is just Epic's cash cow, and they're going to leave it at that, and they're going to keep on trucking the way they're handling that and try to make Rocket League from, like, a probably a low B tier, maybe a high C tier esport, and try to get it to an upper B, lower A tier esport there, just viewership and number wise.
So I can't believe I'm going to say this, because I have been a proponent against Fortnite for so long. I think this is the move that puts Fortnite on the map as far as esports goes, to be honest. I think Rocket League, he's going to come in and redo that schedule, hopefully, because if they get a standard schedule where people can actually root for teams on a week-to-week basis, I think that esport excels a lot higher than it currently is. I think they could also go into franchising there as well. The other big thing, though, with Fortnite, he can now come in and really structure this. It's going to have to look completely different than the Overwatch League. You can't really franchise cleanly in this particular league, in my opinion. You want to run it on a tournament-by-tournament basis, but with all the money they're throwing at it and continuing to see at it, the fact that people have all pretty much left Apex at this point to go back to Fortnite, it feels like it is the Battle Royale, and it's showing that it is here to stay. The way Epic continues to change up the seasons and the player base just continues to find its way back over and over and over again, they need to go into this and they need to allow orgs in. If you allow orgs in, orgs are going to be willing to spend so much more money on branding. They're going to be willing to spend so much more money on players. There's just so much of an advantage if you allow orgs to really brand themselves within the league. I think Fortnite can do that, and Nate already knows how to do it. He's done it before. The big difference is Nate did it where he had to make the orgs change their name to a team and make it a domestic feel. I'm curious if he goes that same route here, because I think that would kill it. But if he goes with the orgs, the traditional orgs, your Fnatic, your Cloud9s, your TSMs, your Team Liquids, stuff like that, I think they could really work around and Fortnite would do really well in that particular platform. But then the other approach you have is you have so many streamers that compete in these big tournaments. Do you allow them to compete as independents? Do you have two different pools, independents versus orgs? I think there's a lot of question marks still, but I think bringing in someone like Nate with so much experience is going to help build out this league. Again, I don't think it's ever going to compete with League of Legends or Overwatch League or anything like that, but I think there is a league here. It's just not going to be in a seasonal format unless you do it by seasonal points based on tournament wins.
So are you telling me that the city-based Fortnite esport league is a pipe dream?
I personally would not go that route. I mean, it could do decently well. Like, let's say Fnatic takes London, for example. All four of those players convert over to the London scene. I just feel like there's so much freaking RNG in Battle Royales. If you jump in the wrong place, if the gun spawns in the wrong place for you compared to another team, I feel like there's too much RNG to really make it a competitive title, let's say. But if you have it at tournaments, like at GamesCon, at E3, at PAX East, different major tournaments at those events, or maybe you set up your own major tournaments throughout, I think tournaments could work really well for this, kind of like we see a CSGO. CSGO can obviously play both ways because it is evened out map-wise, gun-wise, all that kind of stuff. But when you look at something like a Battle Royale, it's got to be one-offs for me. And I say you base it on tournament points. If you do really well in this tournament, you get this many points. If you end up in third, you get a few less points than second and first. I feel like that's the only way to really make it work, in my opinion.
Well, if Fnatic does end up taking that London spot, if Fortnite decides to go the city-based route, I have a perfect name for them. The London Lilyhammers. Simple as that. It's beautiful.
What the heck is a Lilyhammer?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure I stole that from Family Guy, and I have no problem admitting that.
Oh, is that from their esports episode?
No, that's from... did Family Guy do an esports episode? I know Simpsons did.
Oh, shoot, I'm thinking Simpsons. You're right.
The Lilyhammer episode, I believe, was the one where Peter went to go play football for the Patriots, and they played against the London Silly Nannies. But like, I'm pretty sure Lilyhammer came in there somewhere. I don't know, Joey. Don't ask me
the
questions.
The Lilyhammer. Okay. I guess we will go with that. Anything else on this move in particular, John? I think it's a big loss for Overwatch League and a huge game for Epic Games. I feel like Epic Games had to pay Nate a ton, by the way, to make this move happen.
Yeah, I mean, if you read his announcement on Twitter, like, you know for a fact that move was hard for him. Overwatch League's his baby. He was there from the get-go. He developed it into what it is. He's seen it grow, you know, halfway through season two now. Season three is going to be almost 90% sure the start of city-based home and away play, and that's going to be massive. He's not going to be there to oversee that. New commissioner's coming in. Things are going to change probably. I wouldn't say anything's going to change this season. They're probably just going to try to keep the status quo. But next season, there could be some major changes. It's we're going to have to see what happens with PDV coming in here to Overwatch League. But I agree with you. This is a huge win for Epic. Epic bringing over Nate, it's massive. And it's going to be wonderful to see what he's going to be able to do with Epic. Hopefully, with the Epic executives keeping their hands off of it, because so far, it's been a dumpster fire.
Literally an epic win with them taking on Nate Nancer. I think it's going to be a huge move. We'll have to see how it establishes itself as we go forward. But yeah, Nate, a huge talent in the industry. And I think I like the fact that he's jumping ship, but I like the fact that he is moving on. He's going to help establish more and more esports leagues to get it up to the level that we see Overwatch League at. Partnership, State Farm. This is a big one, John. They've extended their League of Legends esports sponsorship. This is going to include the LCS, the Midseason Invitational, the World Championship, All-Stars, and the LOL College Championship, which we're going to touch on a bit more, and they are extending it through 2021. What's the big deal here? For me, John, the huge thing with this thing being renewed is the fact that State Farm is throwing a ton of money into it, and they're willing to reinvest. That means they're finding some return on their investment. They still believe that esports is the way to go, or they're seeing why it's the way to go. And the fact you have a huge name like that, like State Farm, jumping back in and renewing for another 3 years is ginormous.
You know, I'm actually kind of curious. I want to submit a request here. I want to know how many people, esport fans or people in esports, have switched their car insurance or whatever insurance else that State Farm covers to State Farm. I'm actually kind of curious to see what kind of numbers State Farm has gotten from these deals, because again, you know, when you talk about esports, the age range, a large portion of the people that are watching are still, you know, they're on their parents' car insurance. You know, you do have the upper echelon of people over 18 in their early to mid 20s and even older that watch esports. But again, the main target demographic here, you know, you're looking at teenage kids and college kids that are really your number one focus point here. So if they're still on their parents' car insurance, are they saying, hey, when I have to get my own car insurance, am I going State Farm because they're sponsoring LCS and my team plays in LCS? I love LCS, so I'm going to go State Farm. Generally, that's how you want marketing to work, how these partnerships to work, is you want to be able to capture that mindset of the viewer to be like, hey, look, State Farm, car insurance, State Farm sponsors League of Legends. I'm a League of Legends fan. I'm a League of Legends player. Boom, connection. I'm going with State Farm. That's how it's supposed to work. I actually want to know, is it working? If they're re-upping for another 3 years, signs say yes, which is really, really good for State Farm, and it's good for League of Legends. But I'm actually kind of curious. I really want to see the numbers behind it.
Yeah, I'm super curious as well, and just kind of piggybacking on your point, when you look at car insurance, the people who pay the most are teenage boys. That's where a lot of that insurance cost goes. That's your highest average. But you're looking at the parents who are already purchasing the insurance. The parents have insurance on their cars in most cases. So in most of those cases, when you buy that 16-year-old, 17-year-old a car or let them use a car, it's going to be under the same insurance. So I don't think this is a move that's going to sway parents over for the most part. But maybe if kids have some kind of say in that matter, which I don't really know if they do, that'll be the way they go. But at the same point, as you go into this and you look at someone like transitioning into a college, for example, John, insurance ends at 26. So at least at 26, you have to shift over. Maybe when you go away to college, you shift over. It really depends on the family. But I could see those people in that audience level, maybe not your 16-year-olds, but more in that 18 to 24 range, would be the big ones that would switch over, in my opinion, just to reemphasize kind of what you said. And I really think that's the big key here, is the fact that they're picking up on that audience early, they're re-mentioning it over and over and over, and then as they transition on into their own insurance, they know who sponsors League of Legends, they know who believes in esports and gaming, and that's kind of how the way they move on once they choose their own insurance companies.
Just real quick, if you're a 16-year-old who listens to this podcast and you have had this conversation with your parents about car insurance, let us know. I want to have you on the show because I want to know how well that conversation went with, you know, a 16-year-old going up to the mom and saying, "Mom, Dad, sit down real quick. Look, we need to talk about car insurance. I'm about to get my license. I just completed all my driving requirements. I have the test in a week. I want to talk to you about the cut rate car insurance you're currently signed up for and why you should switch to State Farm." Number one reason, State Farm sponsors the LCS. Cloud9 is in the LCS. Therefore, you should get State Farm. Thank you, Mom and Dad, for hearing my pitch. I don't see this going over very well. I would love to hear it. Again, if you're a 16-year-old that has had that conversation, or if after listening to this, you're going to have that conversation, hit me up on Twitter. That's going to be absolutely hysterical.
And I can't speak for the online audience, John, but if you've ever looked at the LCS like pan camera of the audience or the LEC as well, there are tons of parents taking younger kids to those. And they are going to see this all over the place on the online segments posted in the stadium itself, the arena. So the people who actually go, again, I think this is a very small population, but they are probably going to see it a lot more than we do see on the stream side, at least for the parents' end. So I'm curious to see how this shakes out. Like you said, I'd love to see numbers, but apparently State Farm likes it, or at least they see some kind of future in this as they're reinvesting till 2021. Moving on to other news, LPL teams are bidding over $40,000 to draft youth talent. So this is a huge thing, John, and I honestly don't 100% understand the system with the LPL. They're continuing to invest in youth talent, which I think is big, but the way they do it is almost like a draft system. So the way the LPL works is they pull some of the hottest prospects. I want to say it's somewhere in this article. I think it's around 51 move on to the boot camp stage. So right around your 50 mark, let's say. They're going to move on to a boot camp, and they'll be able to be tried out by pro teams, and they can continue to move their way up. And usually this is people in the 16 to 20 age range, those young up-and-coming players. They want to try to catch the mechanical gods early. They want to try to find those players that can find leadership qualities and shot-calling qualities early. I think this is a good move by the league overall trying to do this format. At the same point, I'm still kind of confused on how it works overall.
Yeah, So trying to piece it together, part of it reminds me of the NBA 2K League's Combine, where they bring in a bunch of people, you know, and you can qualify online and you know, you move on to different phases. And once you get to a certain phase, the teams can interview you. And then, you know, there's a whole draft and everything. Well, now that NBA 2K League's in season two, there's a draft hierarchy based upon your record in season one. So that kind of makes sense. Here, you're literally throwing money to be higher in the draft pool. At least that's the way it sounds like it's being explained in this article. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, is this being thrown in to the league? Is this money going back into the league? Is this money going to the player that gets drafted? I'm kind of curious as to how, you know, where this money is actually going. If it goes back into the league, I think that makes sense as a great way to keep the ecosystem up and running. I feel like, I don't know. It's weird because, like, to me, it almost feels like a soccer system where you're paying, you know, an organization for rights to the player. And then when you get the player, you have to pay an additional sum on top of it. It is definitely confusing, and it's vague. It gives specifics in some very interesting areas, but then it gets incredibly vague when it comes to the actual format of the draft, if you will.
Right, so I do know the money goes to the players. So you are bidding for that player to mine, at least that's the way I've understood it from the articles I've read. So you're buying out that player's contract more than anything. So when Fiasco, the support player, goes up on the board, every team has the ability to bid for that player whoever has the highest bid wins, and that goes to the player's contract overall is the way, I, at least I'm understanding it. So when you look at this, I think it's a good system, but overall it feels a bit auction-y to me. I feel like it doesn't really make the league super sustainable in the fact that the number one team, the New York Yankees of the LPL, can keep bidding over and over and over for those top talents if they really want to, the way I'm understanding it. And I think when you look at something else, like the NBA draft is not a good example. Let's go with the NFL draft. That one does the worst team picks first, unless there's other trades that go on. That, to me, is a bit more of a sustainable system. It evens out the league a bit more. Obviously, owners can still overpay, and there's salary caps and different things like that that come into play, and the players have to agree to come to these spots. But in this particular league, it's pretty much whoever throws the most money wins the player. And that, to me, is just going to keep it very top-heavy. Those organizations like a Royal Never Give Up, like an Edward Gaming, can continue to buy back in and buy back in at the young talent level and raise them up that way. Great for the players because they go into a historic, really, organization that really knows its way around, an organization packed full of crazy pro players. Royal Never Give Up is extremely talented. Same with Invictus Gaming. But when you look at it overall, you're never going to find someone like a Snake Esports really making their way up to the top too often if they're constantly trying to go in bidding wars, really, or more than anything, for these youth players in the Chinese scene. So for me, I like the idea that they're investing in new talent. I just wish the system was a bit cleaner and gave a bit more priority to those teams that finished in bottom. Riot Games has announced the formation of the Riot Scholastic Association of America, a new governing body for college League of Legends and games at the high school level as well. This is big, John. Let's talk college scene first overall. Collegiate LOL is something we've seen here and there. It's never really made a huge appearance. Heroes of the Dorm, Heroes of the Storm from Blizzard's or Activision Blizzard's Heroes of the Storm game was really the big esports scene at the collegiate level for the longest time. It was the one being broadcast on ESPN. It was the one that was pulling in more viewers. It was just the scene that was really promoted the most, Heroes of the Dorm. Heroes of the Storm has since pretty much died as an esport. Overwatch is no longer, Blizzard Activision is no longer supporting it. So now that we've seen Heroes of the Storm really step back, Riot Games and League of Legends are trying to really step into that fold. They've made a ton of investments. We've seen Big Ten do a lot of investing. The Big East has also made a number of investments. The ACC has as well, in the collegiate League of Legends scene. I think this is another move to really jump on those investments and really turn them into a professional league. Amateur professionally done league, let's say. It's going to be a lot cleaner, a nicer schedule, better broadcasting, better marketing and promotion. So I think this is a huge win for college athletes more than anything that are trying to go pro in League of Legends. This is now going to be a clearer way of moving to the academy teams, to the pro teams, as well as really promoting League of Legends, which is so popular in the college scene, now promoting that esports and pro aspect to the collegiate side as well. And John, if we're attending a college, you and I, George Mason University, if their esports team is being shown in League of Legends client, I think we're going to more likely tune into it than if it's just randomly being shown throughout the week and we never hear about it. So I feel like they're going to pull in a ton of viewers this way. They're going to be able to pull in casual viewers this way who watch with friends, and then from there translate them to the pro scene as well, which could be more revenue for those organizations, those players in that league overall.
What I love about this is the fact that the NCAA is nowhere to be seen. That organization has so many issues, is so corrupt, is such an absolute travesty when it comes to anything that it touches. I couldn't be happier that they're not here. And we talked about it last episode. As of right now, they don't want anything to do with it because it's not in their bet, blah, 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 blah. Look, that's fine. I'm perfectly cool with it. This is what we wanted. We didn't want the NCAA anywhere near esports. Now Riot is going forward with the RSAA, which, oh, that's going to be so much fun to talk about and not say NCAA after that. There's so much to unpack here because it's a governing body put on by, well, they do have, like, I believe it's a total of six people on the board that are kind of making these decisions, which makes sense. Right? It's just kind of like, they're in the background. It's really up to these six people that come from different colleges, and they're kind of making the rules, the competitive decisions. I like that. That makes sense. I'm fine with that. Riot is just supporting it, which I think is great. Riot is really heavily focused on their professional League of Legends scene. This way they have a board. While they still answer to Riot, the board is the one that makes all the decisions. That makes sense. It's great. It's fine. I'm 100% perfect with it. I feel like Riot is going to be able to, because they're not going to have those same restrictions as the NCAA puts on their players, they're going to be able to use the players for marketing purposes. They have 4 years. If there's a freshman phenom that comes in, you know, most kids graduate in 4 years. Some take 5, 6, 7, 10 years to graduate college. And, you know, you can build that following. You know, if you're a 16, 17 year old that has somewhat of a decent following on Twitch and social media, now you go off to college, you have a bigger exposure. You're in this officially sanctioned league for the collegiate scene. Who knows? Maybe the players could get a paycheck if they appear on, you know, official Riot merchandise or advertisements or marketing, anything that's promoting their school and the RSAA. That makes a whole lot of sense. I feel like I wouldn't put it past Riot to do that. The NCAA would never think about doing that. They're so far behind in the times. I love this move. I want more developers to make this move to develop a college scene. I feel like Rocket League is another good one that could do it. It's sad to see Blizzard Activision kind of just kill off Heroes of the Storm for Heroes of the Dorm. I felt like that had a really good following, and that was really the pinnacle of their esport program for that title. So it's good. The college scene needs to develop. There needs to be some kind of structure and stability behind it. So the RSAA is a step in the right direction. And as long as the NCAA doesn't step in, stay away, it's fine. It's golden. I feel like this is a step in the right direction. I think Riot's doing a good thing here.
Okay, so I don't know how I feel about this, to be completely honest, and there's a few reasons. I think for Riot Games, this is a huge move. I think this is the best move they could have ever thought about making. It makes their pro scene even more valid. It's going to give them more power at the high school and collegiate level. The key for me is this now sets a precedence. If the NCAA is going to step back, and now we have the RSAA coming in for Riot Games and League of Legends, are we going to end up with a ton of different governing bodies for every single esports title? Because I think if that ends up being the case, this becomes a giant mess in terms of scholarships. If I have to do scholarships for all of these different associations, me as a college dean is going to have a nightmare. As an athletic director, this is a freaking nightmare. And it becomes harder and harder for esports to really become prominent at the collegiate level if you have to go through a ton of different governing bodies to get stuff done. So for me, unless they're planning on becoming the giant governing body that's going to compete with the NCAA on the esports side, and they're going to overtake Overwatch and Rocket League and all these other tons of titles, if they're going to try to encompass all of that, and maybe that's what they're doing because they went with Riot Scholastic here instead of League of Legends. Maybe that's the end game for them here. But if you're competing with individual developers for every single title, I think this becomes a mess as far as everything concerned. And I really don't know if it would be sustainable in that sense. I think if it comes down to that, then the NCAA says, hey, let's clean all this all up and we'll assume all of you. That is exactly what you and I don't want to happen. That's what a ton of people don't want to happen. But when you look at like a softball versus a baseball versus basketball versus ice hockey and all these other sports, they all have their own individual small governing bodies, but they all fall under the NCAA. I think that's the route that esports needs to go. It doesn't need to be the NCAA, but it should have an overarching governing body with these other ones underneath it, in my opinion. Otherwise, it just becomes messy. When you have one as the NCAA on one side for the sports, and you have 16 esports governing bodies for the esports side, it becomes a huge mess, in my humble opinion. I can't say it enough. It is a mess. I love the idea by Riot. I absolutely love the idea if they're looking at being that full governing body. And I mean, their freaking logo even looks like the NCAA, the way they wrote out the font in it. So I'm curious if that's the way they go. If not, I think it's going to be great for League of Legends, but I think it does open up a bigger question for esports on the collegiate level as we go farther on. With that, John, jumping to the high school level. So we see Play Versus as an organization that's really taken over a lot on the high school level. They're overlooking, I want to say it's around 6 to 10 titles, probably closer to 6, but it's a good chunk of titles. Now with Riot Games also in this particular association, also looking over the high school scene, what are your thoughts on how it's going to mesh with something who's already established in Play Versus?
It's going to be interesting because I think it comes down to how much the developers are willing to let go of their game. Because when you take a look at the NCAA in traditional sports, nobody owns football. Nobody owns basketball. It's a game that if you want to play at that specific level, you have to play that game by this organization's rules. when it comes to League of Legends, it's constantly changing. The meta constantly changes. And a lot of these other titles, there are small tweaks that go into it. So with those tweaks, the developers are going to have to work with all these different divisions, if you will. So I agree with you. It's going to be a mess in the sense of if every developer has their own titles, and that's going to trickle down to the high school level, because the high school level feels like it's a little bit more organized when it comes to the esports scene, where you have Play Versus overseeing a lot of the growing high school esport teams and organizations popping up. But we're also seeing those games, they're not your League of Legends. They're non-violent games. It's something we talked on before. They're touching on a lot of games that stay away from violence, from gunplay, from blood and gore that gets shown on screen. So it's kind of a weird thing, because the big money makers are your League of Legends, your Overwatch. Rocket League's really like it's good for high school, it's good for college. But it doesn't stack up to those other two. Those are your big moneymakers. Fighting games, that's another big one. The fighting gaming community is huge, especially in this area. So there's so many different things that go into this. I don't know. I kind of want to see this work from the bottom up. I want to see Play Versus really structure high school in a model that really works, and then kind of force that to the collegiate level to force, you know, the RSAA or other scholastic esport governing bodies to organize themselves, to get together, to have that ability to govern college esports. But until then, I really do think we're going to be stuck with having the developers overseeing each of the scenes. It's going to be that headache that you talked about, Joey. It's going to be that athletic director hiring an esport athletic director who hires 18 different assistant esport athletic directors to oversee their own individual title, because they have to work with the developer and everything to ensure that the game doesn't get compromised too much. I mean, can you imagine if basketball changed rules every 2 weeks? I feel like it'd be absolutely insane to kind of manage, you know, on that level. The pro scene is one thing. College, high school, they're balancing academics. And if you're going to sit here and say academics are the first thing, can they keep those changes and still play at that high enough level? It's interesting. I feel like they'll find a way to do it, but they're not going to be able to play 18 hours a day like the pros do. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see how it unfolds.
Right. And Play Versus, again, like John said, they're trying to stay away from violent video games, in particular shooters. So there is no Overwatch at this level yet. There is no Call of Duty. The games they currently present are League of Legends, Rocket League, and Smite. So League of Legends being a direct competitor, potentially, of this Riot Association that's just come out, the RSAA. If they're going to move to this high school level like they say they are, how is that going to work with Play Versus, as League of Legends is their biggest title? Is this Riot saying, we're going to push them completely out of the space for League of Legends? Or is this Riot saying, we're going to take what they've done well at the high school level, continue to work with them and build it up, and also translate it to the collegiate level as well? So I'm curious to see how this all plays out. Riot Games is a big monster to deal with, though. So I'm hoping for Play Versus that they continue to build alongside them, with them, helping each other learn as they go. At the same point, I would not be surprised if Riot goes for the throat as well. Okay, John, League of Legends, we're sticking with it because we still have some more topics to cover. The next one on the slate is going to be the Team Pass. This is one in particular that you and I have been really asking for quite a while. Not this thing exactly, but the fact to see more revenue sharing for esports organizations. The Team Pass is one of those things. We do not know the official split yet. It's going to be a 50% revenue split. We don't 100% know if that's all going to the team, if it's going to the league, if it's 25% to the league, 25% to the team. Multiple articles have said they're not quite sure, but they believe it's going to be a 50% revenue split at the very least. Looking at it all, I think it's a good move. You're going to get an icon, you're going to get an emote, and you're going to get a ward skin. Not the biggest thing in the world, but at the same point, it allows us as fans another way to promote teams, to show our really willingness and rooting for of a team, our fandom of that team, but also a way to support those players to give back to the organization, as there's not a ton of revenue sharing currently in esports, in particular in League of Legends and some of these other up-and-coming esports that are continuing to find their way into ways to fundraise for organizations outside of funding rounds. So I'm happy for this. I'm curious to see how the pricing ends up shaking out exactly. I believe they're going to say it's about $10, with $5 going to Riot and $5 going to that organization or team. Not a huge sum. It's definitely not going to put the prize pool in Dota 2 range, in my opinion. At the same point, I think it is a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, 980 Riot points. It's really not that much, especially when you compare it to what kids are paying for Fortnite skins right now. $20 a skin. Give me a break. it's great, because really the only thing we've had were just team icons. And it feels like Riot's even moving away from like the team icons that have the years on it, because like it's really cool when you can like hey, I have a Fnatic icon from 2014, and it's 2019. I'm like, wow, you've been a fan for so long. Oh, it's so cool. Whatever. It's cool. It's cool. This year they didn't put a date on it, which I was a little upset by. But this is what we want. Like, we want more in-game content. We want to be able to rep our team. If you're lucky enough to be in the official fan group club for whatever team or organization, cool, you can rock the club tag while you're on the Rift. That's cool. But in game, what do you have? You just have the icon, unless your team wins Worlds, and then you have a skin for a specific champion or for 5 or 6 champions. And that's really about it. There's 143 champions in the game right now. So at the end of the day, if your champion isn't, if your pool doesn't get one of those skins, you still can't rep your team. This way you can. And it's a step in the right direction. I want to see a little bit more than just a ward skin and an icon. I feel like there needs to be something else in there as well. But it's a step in the right direction. It's a way you can rock your team. It's a way that you can hop on the Rift. You can, maybe you find someone else that is rocking, a Cloud9 or a Team Liquid or a Fnatic, Foam Finger number one ward skin on there. And you're like, oh, hey, cool. Hey, look, you're a Cloud9 or a Team Liquid or a Fnatic fan also. That's awesome. Blah, 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 blah. Cool. Now you have a duo queue partner or something. It's cool. It's a way to create camaraderie in a very volatile community is a nice way of putting it. But it's cool. It's a step in the right direction. It's going to create fans and increase people's fandom.
Right. And like you said, it's so much different than what we already have in the, I guess you could say, profile picture, as well as the clan tag. Neither one of those really jump out, and neither one of them really funds the team to a ton. Recently, they have changed those icons, so there is revenue sharing on them, at least on certain ones of them. At the same point, it's still not a huge difference. When you look at the clan tag, yeah, you see it here and there. It could be a fake one. It could be a real one. I mean, it's just, it doesn't feel in particular that big. Now you look at something like this, it is officially branded. It is 100% revenue, well, 50%, I guess, particular, but 100% insured that it is revenue sharing involved. If you're throwing down this ward skin, if you're wearing this emote, you're showing that you do 100% at least support that team financially. Again, $5 to the team is not going to be that big of a difference. At the same point, it is a huge step forward for what we've seen in Riot Games in the past. More revenue sharing means bigger prize pools, means more investments from the organizations as well, because if they're getting more money back, they're going to be willing to put more money in. And with that, I think this esport continues to grow. This game continues to grow. And I think that's the big catch here. But this is not the only one that's going to add some revenue sharing, John. We also have another new feature coming, the Pro View feature, which will be activated for the Summer Split. This is going to add extra viewing experiences, similar to what we saw with the Overwatch League. Overwatch League came out with a point of view stream and pass. It's called the All Access Pass. You get some Twitch emotes. You get a few other things here and there, like some League skin currency. The big thing, though, for a lot of viewers is the fact you get point of view cameras. League of Legends now going with that as well. You can watch up to 4 player point of view cameras at the same time. So if you want to see that bot lane duo from both sides, you can follow both AD carries if you want. You can even follow both supports if you really want that super zoned in view. You can look at top lane versus bot lane. You can look at the mainstream versus the crazy mid lane matchup between Caps and Nemesis. I mean, there's just so many different things you can open up with this revenue, especially as an analyst as well. I feel like this opens a lot of doors for young aspiring analysts, as well as viewers who really want to see their players pop off in game. So I'm excited overall. I think the big thing to hit on here is the price point, John. I am slightly concerned with the price point just for future knowledge of it. So currently right now it's selling for $14.99, and that is for one league. If you want to sub both leagues together, the LEC and the LCS, you can combo them for $19.99. I think this is fine. I don't think this is a crazy price point for a split. At the same point, John, my big concern is now, what if you're a fan who watches the LMS and the LCK and the LPL and all these other leagues come next year? Are you going to have to pay an additional $5 for every one of those leagues? Because then we're looking at like $40.
No, I think as of right now, they're just kind of testing the water. I feel like if they do go that route where they keep adding on $5 here and there for every league that you want to watch, that's good. It's going to price you out. I watch NALCS. LCS constantly. this is going to be forever to take this change in effect. I watch the European scene. I watch LEC. But not as dedicated as I do the LCS. For $5, as of right now, I probably wouldn't pay it because I still can't get into my personal Twitch account, which even my Overwatch League pass is tied to. Twitch, please help. It's going on 3 months now. You still don't respond to my emails. So that's all going to waste. But if I had access to my Twitch account, I'd probably go for the $20 one. But then again, I do have income. You know, if you take a look at a 15, 16, 17-year-old kid, he may not have a spare $15 or $20 for this. He may be able to get 15, but he may not be able to get 20. Or the fact that they have the LEC during school hours, for the spring split at least, there's no point in them buying it, because, the LEC is, during the week. I feel like it's at a good price point. I feel like if you watch the LEC and the LCS and you're big into the esports scene here for League of Legends, $5 more for the additional league, I feel like a lot of people can justify that. Again, we're paying the same amount for Fortnite skins. I feel like this probably has a higher return on interest or
investment.
Yeah. Thank you. Interest versus
same difference.
A skin in Fortnite. So to me, it makes sense, but I don't want to see them go down that route saying, oh, you want to watch the LCK in this? It's going to cost you an additional $5. You want to put the LMS, you want to put the LPL in there. It's going to get way too expensive. And I don't feel like you're going to be able to get people to do that. Now, I feel like if you want to give an all-access pass to every region for $25, I feel like that's a sweet spot. $25 for every single region in the world, that kind of makes sense. I don't see that happening. I don't think they're going to do this for every region. I think they're going to do it for the major regions. I think Korea is going to get it. I think China is going to get it. I don't know if the South American scene will get it. I don't know if the Southeast Asia and Oceania region are going to see this anytime soon. I feel like this is going to be mainly for those high-level, high-populated viewership areas in these regions that they already have the resources to pull something like this off. I don't see this coming to Brazil anytime soon or Vietnam or anything else like that for the leagues down there. This is definitely a Europe, an LEC, LCS, LCK, LPL, you name it, that's where you're going to see this.
Right, yeah. And I was playing a bit of devil's advocate at the beginning here. I think the next ones you do see are the LCK, LMS, and LPL being added next year. Then maybe Oceania and Japan down the road, possibly Brazil. And I think even if you look at the price point, like the LCK and LMS, if you and I really want to watch those, we're going to catch a VOD. There's no way we're waking up regularly at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. to watch those matches. So I think for both of us, it makes sense to go for the LCS LEC package at $20. Not crazy overpriced to get two leagues for it. At the same point, I really don't need to see a Faker cam every single time. I can find highlights of it if I really want to. So I think it's workable as a normal fan in a certain country, just because there is so much time difference between the different leagues, and the times would just be crazy late or crazy early for certain people to do certain leagues. And I think VODs do work better for that. And I don't really know if you need all four angles for that particular VOD. So for me, I think you're fine with one, maybe two leagues even. And I think it prices right along with the Overwatch League, right in that same general sector. So I think that was a good move by League of Legends there. I want to say there was one other point I wanted to make on this that I found really interesting. Let me just check this quickly. It just popped out a second ago. Oh, correct. So big moments. This is another huge feature for me, John. You can highlight big moments on the timeline. So if there's a huge team fight, like, or maybe it's a 2v2 up in top lane between both jungles and the top laner, you'll easily be able to find that bookmark and flip back to that fight. That, to me, is a huge feature. Because sometimes, it doesn't always happen, but sometimes the spectator camera will miss a fight that happens off to the side. Sometimes they'll replay it. Sometimes there's just too much action to go back. Now with this particular feature, we can hit that bookmark whenever we want, zoom back to that fight, and jump back to live if we want to or wherever we were. I think that is a huge feature that kind of comes under the radar for this particular pass.
Oh, yeah. Or if you want to see Blue Buff make a kill for Cloud9 in Worlds and you missed it, you know, you can easily go back and rewind and watch that fight like almost in real time. So I think that's great. I think it's fantastic. You know, some people may not be able to catch the match right as it starts. They want to get quickly caught up, but they don't want to miss too much. Boom, you pull this up. Oh, I see there's three bookmarks. Major fight, Baron Steel. Cool, watch it real quick. 15 seconds, 15 seconds, 15 seconds, or 30 seconds, or however long it takes for the team fight. Then boom, you fast forward. Now you're back live. Now you have a basic understanding, a fairly in-depth understanding of how the game has gone that you, if you want to even participate in chat online, you can do it and not feel like you don't know what you're talking about. I absolutely love that feature. I think that's going to be huge.
Absolutely ginormous. The other thing is they're going to show advanced player statistics. So the player statistics you get on lolesports.com or that you've seen previously on Twitch, it's now going to be able to dive more in depth. Maybe you get that CS per minute highlighted a bit more. Maybe they jump into those advanced statistics a bit more on this as well. Another huge addition, in my opinion. Yeah, I'm excited for this, Sean. And last but not least, I do want to touch on this just slightly more. You and I, one of our biggest fears when League of Legends was looking at different deals with the MLB network and looking at all these other viewership networks of how to make League of Legends paid, one of our biggest fears was that they were going to make the content paid overall. We thought it was going to be a terrible move, especially with it being free for so long. I like the fact they've gone this route instead of making all of the content paid. If we had to have a subscription just to watch the base game, I think League of Legends esports would take a huge dive. There'd be a lot of people not willing to pay that price tag. Now you still get that free advertising, that free viewing, but you also allow those fans that really want to dive more into the team, dive more into the esports culture to find their way in as well. Good times there. Let's move on. Xbox. The Xbox app for Windows appears to be beginning to be phased out as features are being cut from it and added to the new Windows Game Bar. John, this is freaking ginormous for gamers on PC that want to play with friends on Xbox, and even just gamers on PC who don't want to deal with the Windows Store. I think this is a giant jump forward. The voice quality on the Xbox app from PC over has been terrible for both of us. I've seen invites pop up. You've had issues with even invites popping up. So I think there's a ton of different things going on with this Windows system. And we already heard Phil Spencer speak about it in November. They are looking at overhauling the complete Xbox experience on the PC. They want to make the game store better. They want to make gaming on PC a smoother transition coming from the Microsoft platform. I think phasing out the app and slowly moving it out of the way, as well as introducing this game bar, which looks freaking sick from videos. For some reason, my PC does not have it yet, but I feel like it offers a ton to the experience, and it's going to be a much nicer thing than we had with the app.
Yeah, the app, look, I'm going to be very blunt. Joey, cover your ears. I'm about to say some really bad words. The Xbox application was pure plastic four-tier, hot, burning, noobish trash. It was awful. It was an absolute joke. After everything Microsoft has been doing, acquiring developers, acquiring production studios and everything, they let the Xbox app just be hot garbage for how long? And now they're just now starting to fix it? Great. You know what? Kudos to them. They're finally fixing something that's been broken since day one. I like it. It's a step in the right direction. But Joey, much like you, my PC still hasn't updated to it. And I don't know how to update to it. I want to get rid of the Xbox app because it is pure hot doo-doo. It is awful. Absolute trash. I want to get rid of it. The new bar system, it looks amazing. The developer video from Microsoft explaining it, it looks amazing. It doesn't look clunky. It looks like it actually functions for a change. I need this update. Like yesterday, Windows, Microsoft, why do I not have? I want now. Please and thank you.
So again, they're not completely getting rid of the Xbox app yet. I think it is coming.
They need to get rid of
but
it.
They are starting to phase features out and move them to the game bar. A few new things you guys can see: Spotify integration, huge for gamers. We already see it coming in on Xbox. It's fully integrated there. Now they're going to integrate it. It's easily to get to on Windows, but integrating it straight into a game, I would say HUD, really, in a sense, is kind of how this is going to work, as an additional HUD that'll overlay on your games for a momentary moment for you to change songs, to message friends, that kind of thing. You're going to see the friends, chat, mixer, and looking for group features also move over to the game bar. Again, another huge thing for me. The Xbox app is so clunky to bring up, like John said. Clicking on friends, chatting with friends, it just does not seem seamless. Now with this new game bar, it looks much cleaner. It looks a lot easier to tune into streams as well. Looking for group, a great feature everywhere. A lot of people use Reddit, but I think this is another clean way to do it outside of that in Discord. Broadcasting yourself, it's going to be much easier to broadcast. It doesn't dive into the broadcasting details. I'm thinking this is probably more mixer heavy than it is Twitch or YouTube or really Caffeine, any of those other ones. The Xbox app on Xbox and on the phone allow for Twitch and Mixer, but I'm guessing with PC, as they're continuing to jump into this ecosystem and really develop it more from the Microsoft side, I think they're going to push Mixer even more on that. And then a customizable UI, having a customizable UI allowing you to move things around, close out things that you really aren't going to use. Like, let's say John has no friends and he never wants to use the friends list. He can just close that right out.
Wow.
I thought we'd have fun with that. Streamers, like if you're not a streamer, you're never going to stream. Close out the broadcast stuff. Get it out of the way. And being able to move your UI around for stuff that you're going to use more easily. Maybe you put something in the top right corner because that's where your mouse always is in a game and it's easier to flip over to that. I mean, there's just so many different things when you add customization in. I think this is a great place to do it. And I think this is a good step forward and really Microsoft finally coming back on their promise, showing that they are still investing into Windows with all this crazy Xbox stuff happening on the console side. Now they're going to continue to expand the Xbox brand onto Windows in a cleaner manner. I think there's still a lot to do. The Windows Store is probably the worst gaming store I've ever seen out there electronically. Download times in that thing are terrible. Searching on that feels so laggy and slow as well. I mean, Sea of Thieves updates for a couple gigabytes takes for frickin' ever. So I think they really need to overhaul that next, but I think this game part is a huge step forward for the company. Anything else on the lovely game bar? You guys can catch a video as well. The article John and I have is www.player.one. And then there's a Microsoft introduces the new Xbox game bar with Larry Erb over there at Major Nelson. I think it looks great.
Are you too afraid to post it in the chat? Or you feel like Nightbot's going to hand you a ban in chat if you post a link?
You can post the link.
Nope,
go ahead.
I don't feel like.
By the way, chat, I know we don't have a ton of you here because we did switch days up and it wasn't super mentioned on Twitter. We did switch days and Nightbot has been turned off supposedly, or at least it has lost all of its restrictions, is what we've been told. So we will see. It'll probably still shut someone out, but hopefully everything is working fine now.
Just don't spam and don't type in all caps. You'll be fine, or I'll have to manually ban you on Twitch. Oh, no. Oh, so you say that, and Squirrel is in chat, so he goes, let me test that. So he types in all caps, hey, Nightbot. And sure enough, he did not get banned. He gave the thumbs up. I'm going to quickly time him out real quick for all caps. I'm joking. I didn't.
Hey, Squirrel, can you throw, like, a few emotes, too, like a line of them, and see if it does anything?
Oh, but are we really testing this live right now?
I'm just super curious. I mean, we can keep going on with the show, but I mean, while we have someone right there.
So, Joey, just to follow up on a hot topic that we touched on last week, it was breaking news at the time, very new, just solely based upon rumors, and that's the Tfue and FaZe Clan drama that is going on, or you just try to call it what it is, the lawsuit that's going on. Some updates, the contract, Tfue's contract has been leaked. FaZe Bank said he was going to release it. I believe it was leaked prior to him releasing it through a celebrity website that follows all of the celebrity California Hollywood drama. It's a 13-page contract, and a lot of the things Tfue came out and said that he was complaining about is true. A lot of those numbers that he threw out there that were rumors at the time are now backed up. If this is the true leaked contract, which it looks like it is, those numbers are true. But does his claim fill out the rest of the story? And it doesn't. There's a lot more that goes into it. It's a very methodical contract. It's written with a lot of legal jargon. So it's taken us a little bit to get through to make sure that we have all of our T's crossed and I's dotted before we can really bring a lot of that to you. So we're just going to hold off for one more week as we keep going through that contract. Again, it's a 13-page contract. It's a 27-page lawsuit. So there is a ton to unpack there. So instead of just speculating, you know, neither of us are lawyers, so we can't tell you California law or anything else like that. It's going to be purely from an e-sport enthusiast perspective here. So we want to take a little time to unpack all of that and try to bring you the best arguments for either side here and see how this plays out in the future.
Now, before we jump away, though, just a few lessons learned here. If you are a aspiring pro esports player, please read the contract, get your parents to look at it, get a lawyer to look at it. Regardless of what it says, if it's super equal or not, if it's going to favor you or not, or favor the org, get someone to look at the contract. There can be small print. There can be really weirdly worded stuff that can end up not very much in your favor. Get someone to look at the freaking contract, preferably a lawyer. On top of that, a few things have been validated. There was an 80% clause in that contract saying that FaZe could take 80%. Apparently, according to both parties, FaZe has not collected on that 80% for a number of different things. So even though it was in the contract, it has not been collected. At the same point, it still says they have the ability to collect. So is that FaZe going at good fortune here saying, hey, we don't want to take advantage of you in that way? At the same point, it could just be, hey, FaZe is holding this out, trying to get him to sign a new contract, and they're not going to collect because they want to keep him on board. So a few different things there. One of the other big points, Sean, and we hit on this last week, it means we need agents and talent agencies in esports. As we make this more and more professional, esports versus sports, sports players have agents out there. They have agencies behind them. They even have unions behind them. This is something we're probably going to see, or we should see more in esports. Yes, union gets sticky. Talent agencies can get sticky. Contracts get a little crazy if you look at some of these MLB ones that were recently signed in Major League Baseball. At the same point, for players' sake and for the sake of these streamers as well, it is something that needs to come to esports if it's going to continue to grow on the professional scene. So just a few things to hit on there. Again, John and I still need to dive into the contract and the specifics of it a bit more, but there's a whole lot coming out. Both sides are saying very different things as well surrounding this contract. FaZe, for example, is saying that they offered Tfue multiple contracts to re-sign at a more even rate. They're saying Tfue declined like buying into them, to signing them. Tfue saying it didn't happen. So it could just be FaZe trying to deflect and defend themselves, again, before they even release the contract. At the same point, it could just be Tfue saying, hey, I didn't really care because I want to start my own organization and cut out this cut anyway. The last thing that I want to touch on, John, is the fact that Tfue's viewership did jump a huge amount when he joined FaZe Clan. It is a ginormous total, millions of difference in viewers because he had that FaZe Clan backing. Again, Tfue, very popular, very good streamer, but he cannot deny that FaZe helped him grow in popularity, and I think that is something we're going to see come back out as this case goes forward. Regardless of what the contract says, even if it breaks certain law, they can argue that they helped his reputation significantly grow, and that could be something in favor of FaZe as these court proceedings play out if it goes to court.
Yeah, and also on social media, FaZe Clan has taken an absolute beating from you know, Tfue's fans, the people that like Tfue, who may have been with Tfue prior to his signing with FaZe Clan. Look, it's a bad contract. FaZe Banks even admits it's a bad contract. But the one thing we need to realize is this is not abnormal. These contracts in esports exist. It's not just FaZe Clan doing it. There's other organizations that are giving out these entry-level contracts, if you will, where it heavily favors the organization. And the organization is going to try to defend it by saying, you know, hey, look, this person's new. They're being brought into this monster that is the esports scene, or in this case, is FaZe Clan, with a multi-million person following, a global following all around the world. It's absolutely massive. FaZe Clan is more than just an esport organization. It's a social media organization. It's got massive presence on YouTube. It is all over the place. It is such a big conglomerate, if you will, of social media and video games. So they have to protect their assets too. Now, not defending them for giving out crappy contracts, but this goes back to the point Joey just made. You need to look over this. If it seems too good to be true, you have to weigh the positives and the negatives. Am I willing to give up 80% of my winnings from a tournament, or 80% of the income that comes from a partnership with FaZe Clan that I helped bring in. Am I willing to give up 80% for my viewership to go from 300 to 300,000 in a several month time span? Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to make that money up through donations, which, oh yeah, by the way, FaZe Clan still gets a cut of? You have to weigh the positives and the negatives. That's why you need an agent. I would argue, and I made this point on social media, that 90% of the issues that we're seeing in this lawsuit from this contract could have been solved with a competent agent or lawyer looking over it, saying, hey, look, this is an area of concern. This is an area of concern. Go back, renegotiate this, try to figure this out, get something that is a better deal for both parties.
100%. And like John said, we will break this down more and more as we dive more into the contract, as more facts come out as well. The contract is one thing, but if FaZe is also going to be able to produce emails showing that they tried to negotiate and Tfue shot them down just to come back later with this, that opens up a whole other can of worms. So really, it just comes down to what is shown in court. If it goes to court, what other negotiations are made? What other proof can be shown in written statements as well? So a lot to really unpack here. Both sides definitely have ways to improve. Tfue needs to learn how to read contracts and particularly hire lawyers. On the same side, FaZe needs to be a lot more respectful. And again, like John said, FaZe is not the only organization doing this. I guarantee a lot of smaller organizations are also doing similar things. As players are young, they really don't know what they're doing. Some of these players don't even have good relationships with their parents, so they're just looking to buy into this. They know they're good at a game, and they just want to buy into this position to kind of affirm themselves in a sense. So it really comes down to an individual player basis. Not saying that is Tfue's case at all, but saying this is definitely happening more out there. It's not just Tfue it's happening to.
Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. You can also find us streaming regularly on Twitch as well. This show, normally Monday nights. We also have another streamer, Richard, Tuesday nights. Sometimes John on Thursday nights. We're mixing more here and there. We have new emotes out as well. Twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right. Make sure you tune in next week as we return to Monday nights to catch all the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level Up.